Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories. It's all right here for you with this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Remember to visit us online, too, at besteveryou.com. And now here's your host, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
All right, guys. Hello, 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 and welcome to the Best Ever You Show. We are going to be talking today about bringing your book to life in 2012 or beyond. If it takes you a little longer than that, we totally get it. This is the crew that understands how hard it is to write and publish a book. With us today, we have Lisa Tenner and Linda Joy, and they are both going to be here today to talk about their event that is coming tomorrow, which you can register for. They're still taking registrations. It's a teleseminar, but we really want this episode of the Best Ever You Show to live on. I want this to be a resource for you guys to be able to go to and listen to, play back, and contact both Lisa and Linda if you ever want to write a book. So if you miss the teleseminar tomorrow night, I really just want this to stand as a way for everyone listening to learn how to write, how to start writing, how to publish that book that everybody has within them, where everybody says, I really, really, really want to write a book, but there's that but, I don't know how. So we're going to answer that today for the next hour. And so let me just briefly introduce both of these ladies to you. Linda is, Linda, you're awesome. That's your intro. Linda, you're awesome. You are the founder of, enough said, we can all hang up now. Linda's awesome. She is the publisher of Aspire, and she is on a mission. And Linda, please interject here. What's your website again? It's like mission2inspire.com. Did I get that right?
Yes, it is. Thanks.
All right. Welcome, welcome, welcome. But you're on a mission to inspire 100,000 women. And you have a printed magazine. You have a wonderful website that people can go and register for your magazine and get that great information. And it really is inspiring and helpful and full of just, it's energy rich. I love it. So I'm hoping people do that. Let's rattle off that website one more time so people can go there and get your magazine subscription.
Well, it's mission2inspire.com. Now brings you right to the free subscription page. And we have always been a print magazine for 5 years, but we are now digital and global.
Cool.
We no longer do the print edition. But from our conversation, Elizabeth, you're correct.
I remember, because we're kind of in that same zone of it's really hard to print magazines and get them distributed properly unless you've got some huge, company behind you doing that or whatever. So I totally get that. It's so much easier with a click of a button to get that, to blast that out into the universe, isn't it?
Oh, it's been amazing. We're reaching tens of thousands of women who are now subscribers, but we can reach them from all over the world. And they're all looking forward for information to transform their lives, and that's what Aspire's mission is all about.
Yeah, and you inspire people in so many different ways, and one of the ways that we're going to be talking today again is how to write that book. And I know you're also a published author. Can you talk just briefly about the name of your book and, how that came to be?
Well, actually, it came to be from your guest, Lisa Tenner, so I'll the name of the book is A Juicy, Joyful Life, Inspiration from Women Who Have Discovered the Sweetness in Every Day. And the second book is Embracing Your Authentic Self. And the third book will be released. We just announced the call for authors. But it was Lisa, actually, who, as Aspire, went through phenomenal growth, challenged me to write my own story. And as I've shared on many shows and with Lisa, I wasn't ready to publish my own story. And it was Lisa who challenged me. In fact, it was during my course with her that said, you're meant to release a book, and if you're not going to release yours, then why don't you make a platform to release others? And, God, I think my class with Lisa was October to December, and I launched my own publishing company in January. Lisa was the catalyst behind that, and we've since released three books. And it gives women a voice and a venue. We work only with women. And Lisa's guidance through that whole process of getting me clear on what message I wanted my books to have. So I'm honored to be bringing Lisa in front of my audience tomorrow.
Now, I know that feeling of working with Lisa and trying to get that message clear. I'm hoping that
she kicks your butt, doesn't she?
Well, you know, Lisa, she's brilliant, and you're both brilliant, and it's a joy to have you here, because I hope people really, we'll get to the topic here, but I want to take a minute to just really give you the recognition that you both deserve for being, you know, as smart as you are, and such a great resource and place where women can go and feel all safe and cozy and learn how to write, which is, you know, a way that a lot of people express themselves, so it's awesome. So welcome, Linda, and welcome, Lisa. Now, Lisa, you're a published author. Also, you teach writing. You teach these courses at Harvard every once in a while, I'm told. And what's the name of that again?
Well, I call it Harvard Medical School's CMA Publishing Course, because the name the name's gotten really, I think, a little bit confusing. Because it is a continuing medical education credits.
Yeah.
But I get it.
But yeah, you've been everywhere. I mean, people call on you frequently as a resource to get that book done, to get it maybe even, you know, if it's done, maybe edited, changed. I know I've been working with you to just try and get the darn subtitle, you know, the hook done for mine and stuff. And that, it's a little harder than people might think it is. Just talk about how difficult it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it can be. And I think the more we do that work up front of getting clarity, the easier it is. And sometimes the title and subtitle come at the end. If you're really clear on your vision and your reader and what you want to do with the book, then sometimes I tell authors, don't get too hung up on the title and subtitle. Let's just go with a working title. And then, you know, we can really refine it later.
Yeah. And so, okay, so both of you, if people want to, let's talk about this teleseminar tomorrow, because this is really going to take people through, like, you know, an A to Z way to, well, you're not doing the A to Z, but, you know, I always think in alphabet, it's just me. But, you know, the whole thing of, you know, writing a book from start to finish, and then beyond. And how do people get a hold of listening to that teleseminar tomorrow night, and does it cost money to be
with
you guys?
So the teleseminar is free, and they can sign up at lisatenner.com. It's lisatenner.com/inspired-teleseminar.
Okay.
So it's lisatenner.com/inspired-teleseminar, and just don't forget that hyphen. And it we'll show them how to sign up. They'll get a unique phone number and PIN just for them for that call. And it's gonna be a fabulous call. We have over 900 people registered.
Congratulations, isn't it? What a great thing.
Well,
now,
you know, the exciting part, Elizabeth. This is the fourth time, Lisa, that I've hosted you in a call, and each time we reach these types of numbers for registration. What's that say? There are so many people who want to birth their story or birth their book. And after my experience of working with Lisa is when I reached out to say I want to host you and interview you for this series of calls. So I'm so excited that the turnout is again there, because her calls are content rich. I mean, at 90 minutes of her walking you through all the information that you need. So I'm excited about tomorrow.
No, I think, you know, I think everybody's excited about it, and I think it'll just catch on more and more. What do you do, though, Lisa and Linda, if you can't be there tomorrow night at that time? Is there a way to play that back? Can you pay for it? What do you do if you miss that?
Yeah, we will have, you know what, people should still sign up, even if it's over, and then they'll get a recording of it. They'll get a link to a recording of it. So they can sign up even once the call is over. And we'll make sure that they get the recording, because it is a powerful call. We'll be going over those first steps. We're going to have some special guests on the call who will talk about their experience of writing and publishing their books and some of the things that help them. We're also going to, you know, address some of the most common questions people have, and really address some of the mistakes people make, you know, so that you don't make those mistakes, mm-hmm. and really get you started. So if you're feeling overwhelmed about where to start, this will get you on the right track and give you those questions that you want to answer before you start writing, because sometimes if people start writing without doing that pre-work, it ends up being more work because, you know, you don't have the focus and the clarity and the structure that you need, and then it becomes more complicated. So really, the more work you can do up front, actually the more ease it brings in. And that's why people will often write a first draft and complete a first draft in my 8-week course, because we do the structure up front before the class starts. They're really clear on what the book is, and then it's just a matter of writing it.
Right. You know, before we go on, we have one thing. We have a little bit of business that we need to take care of, and that's that Linda Joy, Lisa Joy, Lisa, Linda, both of you guys, Linda Joy is a new grandmother. Yay!
Yay!
Baby
next
pain,
week
please.
She'll be 3 months, so it's
aww.
Been a whirlwind, and she's healthy and thriving, so I'm blessed.
Well, and the baby's name?
McKenna. Mm-hmm.
Cute. Okay, yeah, I remember that. So I just wanted to say that because, you know, that's just exciting. It's just happy
it
and cute exciting. And fun. Babies are so cute. Okay, and speaking of babies, I have one home with me, and I know Lisa's are somewhere. Her kids, I've got glass. I joke around when I'm on the radio because if I start laughing out of the blue, it's because one of my children has pressed their nose and face against my glass pane door. They do that kind of stuff. So, all right, let's go to the book though. How I'm going to go with Lisa first. Lisa, how do you know if you've got a book in you or not?
Well, it's a great question because I think often people wonder and they're not sure. You know, I think the first thing is that you feel this prompting, and some people feel it really strongly. They might even deny it for many years, saying I'm not a writer and I don't know where to start. But I've worked with people who just, even though they might not have done well in grammar school or high school or college with writing, something in them is like, you've got to write this book, you've got to write this book. And I love working with people like that because once they learn a few rules about good writing, they really surprise themselves, amaze themselves with what they can write. So if you've got a little bit of passion there, something that won't go away, that's a good sign. And, you know, sometimes, too, it's like, is this a book or is it an article? You know, there's that question, right? That's the question that agents and publishers ask. Is there enough here for a book? And so starting to outline it and work with it will help give you a sense of if there's enough here for a book. Thinking about, do I have a lot of stories or anecdotes? You know, if it's like a self-help or how-to book, thinking about, do I have enough anecdotes or stories to share, or can I collect some? And someone we both know, Elizabeth Cady, is interviewing additional people to add to the stories that she has so that she has enough stories for her book. So that can be a way that you sort of figure out how to have enough there for a book. And it might be, too, like write a blog post and see, is that enough? Have you said everything about the subject? Or do you feel like, oh, no, there's like 30 more blog posts I can write? You know, to sort of see... And elaborate on each of them, you know, so see really maybe start with something smaller, and that can also help you get a sense of, like, have I said it all or not? But I think a lot of it is in that sort of outlining and looking at structure of a book. Is there enough there?
Yeah. Now, look, I'm going to use my experience with you for a little bit, just because I think it represents enough people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I started writing, and I wrote my book, and I wrote it in a Word file, you know, that's just on a normal computer kind of thing. And I set it up sort of like a book, like how I thought a book might look, like a title page and by me, and then like a dedication page and a table of contents. And then I did a chapter and then the writing and then a chapter and then the writing. Now, is that how you would expect to receive information like that, or is there a different, better way to sit down and start actually writing a book?
I really like people to ask some questions ahead of time about, you know, what's my overall vision, what's the book going to do for my readers and for me, and who is my reader, really getting clear, maybe doing some exercises on getting clarity about the reader, and thinking through the sort of features and the structure of the book a little beforehand. And and then actually outlining. You might not know all the chapters yet, but coming up with something of an outline and then start to write. And that way you've got sort of a framework that I think is going to really help you save a lot of time. But yes, once you've got that, then to write a chapter and get some feedback is fine. It's helpful in the beginning because it's going to affect your writing. Like as you get feedback from an editor or writing coach, you'll get some feedback that helps you realize, oh, okay, I need to do more showing. And as you're writing the next chapter, you're going to be looking for ways you can do that. So that's great. But then once you have a few chapters, you may decide, okay, now I want to write the book and then get feedback, then get editing, and you can do that too. So, you know, it's going to be very dependent on the book and the person, but that's sort of an overall.
Yeah. Now, Linda, how did you and Lisa meet?
That's funny. Lisa actually lives in the state next to me. So when I started Aspire Magazine back in, 2005, I used to also run women's events called Love, Light, and Laughter. So Lisa and I connected because of the work she's doing in the world, and she was in my circle of influence, you can say. And I started inviting her to speak at my women's events, which her workshops always filled right up. So that's how our relationship started. Then it became a friendship, and then she became a contributing writer to Aspire and part of Aspire's dream team that we put together in 2009 for that year. And that's how we met. And so when it came time for me, as Lisa said, sometimes you get that pulling to do a book. There was only one person I was turning to, and that was Lisa. And I'll tell you, she does kick your butt. And she, but you got me clear because I love the advice you just gave Elizabeth. And I remember this from class. You said, if you don't know who your reader is and you write the book, and I'm paraphrasing Lisa's unbelievable guidance, but basically, how are you going to market it?
Yeah.
So the book is done, but if you're not sure who your audience is and who you're truly speaking to, I find from this end in the publishing, it's harder to market. So I receive a lot of manuscripts, and they wrote a book from their heart, and it is beautiful. But if I ask them, well, who's this for? They have no idea. They can't even name it.
Or
that
they'll say everybody.
And when you say everybody, publishers run like heck. Because you can't market to everyone. So Lisa, did I paraphrase what you taught us? That you have to know who the reader is that you want to help transform their lives.
This is so key, critical right here. I hope everybody listening hears what we're saying right here. Because I think almost the very first thing you have to do, it, in my hindsight's a little 2020 here, because I learned this. But, you know, as you sit down to write that book, what Lisa and Linda are telling you is that you need to really seriously take a good look at who is going to be reading your book. Is it the guy on the airplane? Is it the lady who's got four kids at home? Is it the doctor down the street? Is it the dentist across the street? Who is it that's going to read that thing? Why is that so important?
It's important because if it's watered down and you're trying to write for everybody, people won't realize it's for them. They're going to see that book and go right by it, you know, or they're not going to, in general, I mean, there's always exceptions, but they're not going to really resonate in the same way as if you were talking so directly to them. And here's the beauty is when you really pick a clear audience and you write for them, other people will come. It's like this dartboard, right? That core audience is the bullseye. Other people will come. So if you write a book for teenage moms, you know, their moms will read it too, you know, or their other relatives who are supporting them. There'll be other people who read it, or the therapists who, you know, help them, right? Those people will read it, and maybe even there'll be people who recommend it to other moms. But your core audience will know it's for them by the words you use, by the title, by the examples. And so it really comes alive for them. They know this is the book for me because it's written to them. And sometimes it's really helpful even to picture one specific reader. It could be a real person, could be an imagined person. But every time you write to them. And as you do that, you'll just naturally become more conversational and more connected to that core reader, that particular person you're writing for. And And it's powerful. So, you know, you can also do those exercises about figuring out what are the demographics of my audience, what are some of the psychographics, what gets them up at night, you know, in the morning, what keeps them up at night, you know, all those things that really can help you get closer to who they are. But then actually picture someone, and you'll find it very, very powerful.
Yeah.
But Lisa, now, do you remember when I was trying to get clear on what the first book would be, and you had asked me, you know, who's your target audience? I said, well, woman. Everything I do is for women. Mm-hmm. And you said, no, which woman? And I was like, this is homework. And I had to get clear. And by you giving me that homework, though, I got clear that my books are for women between 30 and 55 who are interested in spiritual, emotional growth, self-improvement, personal development, and who always have a yearning for wanting something more in life, an inner journey. And there was much more to it, but I got very clear. And if you hadn't pushed me to do that, I couldn't have answered the same question that a lot of our listeners right now are wondering, who is my book for?
Yeah,
so that's how deep. I mean, she had me write, it was a total paragraph, but I knew at the end of that paragraph that was who I was speaking to. And it changes the tone, how you want your book to be, changes the language you use. So that was an important lesson I learned from Lisa.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Linda, I think it affected the features too. I think one of the things I love about Juicy Joyful Life is those exercises. You know, at the end of reading a person's personal story and journey, there's some exercises to reflect on, some questions to reflect on. And by doing that, I think you took
a model,
you know, the next level to go deeper. And I think that really came out of knowing your audience and knowing they were looking to go deeper. These are people who want to go deeper. They don't just want to read a book. They want to interact with it. So I think that's a really good example of how once you know your reader, things will come out of that might not be able to come out of it if you're really not clear and you're thinking more generically. And, you know, I have to admit that my first book, when I first started writing, I thought, you know, hey, everyone needs to talk about anger. You know, this book is for everyone. So I made that same mistake. It's really common, unless you know, are a marketing person or you're in the book industry. You know, it's pretty common to think that at first. But once you really delve and go deeper, things will open up for you, and you'll get just more creative ideas because you're really connecting deeply with that reader.
Well, it's hard too because you know the last thing that you want to think about when you're writing something is alienating somebody or having them not read it. So you know when you sit down to write a book, well, who do you want to read your book? Of course, you want everyone to read your book. So why wouldn't you write it for everyone? Because you know. Yeah,
in that moment that you're thinking that, it does sound logical. But in the industry and in targeting an audience, you can't market something to everyone because then there is no distinct message for a core group.
Right.
And I know there's, like you said, there's exceptions to the rule, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
But it's what I've discovered. If you look at all the major books out there, they know their audience. They're speaking to it. And so it is. Yeah. I understand exactly what you mean.
Well, think about Harry Potter for a minute. Think about Harry Potter. Harry Potter, she did not set out to write that book and go, you know what, the whole world is going to read this book. It was for kids.
Right,
you know, that's the thing. So, you know, bless everyone's heart if everybody does read your book, but you guys are saying, you know, focus. And do that because I know I had this exact conversation with Lisa. I don't know how many months ago it was now, but you know she asked me that question. Well, who's your book for? And it was silence. It was like, well, duh, everyone.
I know what Lisa said.
She's like, duh, it's coming right back at you. So it was funny, but So focus is the mission there. Now let's skip to the million-dollar question because everybody, you know, thinks that we're going to write this book, right? And you are going to be, you know, your driveway down at the end there, your mailbox is just going to fill with money. Overflow with money because you've written a book and everybody's read it and good golly, you're on every major program and you are famous from writing this book and it's rolling. You are rolling.
Not reality.
From writing this. No, okay.
Not reality. Lisa, what's your experience?
So my experience is that if you're looking just for book sales to write your book, then you'll probably lose money for the most part. But if you're looking for the book to do other things, open other doors for you and for your readers, then absolutely it can be a great business decision. And I've seen people make tens of thousands of dollars and hundreds of thousands of dollars and more because of what the book does, the doors it opens. So, you know, you want to think about it ahead of time. You don't want to wait till the book's out there and then say, oh, now how can I use this as a business tool? Because even if you don't have a business, like Pat Hastings is a good example. She just had this, you know, urge to write a book, and it was really, I think it was, you know, a spiritual prompting, and she eventually gave into it, not really quite believing she could do it. And then her book came out, and 9 months after that, she retired from her job as a substance abuse counselor and started speaking, leading retreats, both nationally and then also like on cruise ships and in Hawaii and Bermuda. So she did a lot of travel with it. But that book really was funding her love of travel and also paying, you know, in addition, she would get all expenses paid, plus she'd get a stipend. So for her, you know,
it wasn't the book sales that created that.
Yeah,
it was the opportunity that the book opened.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, another example is Ivana Maggiore, who wrote The Power of, Fashion Feng Shui, The Power of Dressing.
I love her.
Yeah, and it's such a beautiful book. But, you know, that book, they'll just find it on the web, read it in one sitting, and sign up for a seminar a lot of the time because it's such a powerful system, and they read the book and really get how powerful it is and want to go in more depth. So one of the things your book lets you do is really help readers get a sense of, okay, here's something you can learn from me. And then, you know, you can also go deeper because a book will take you so far, but usually only so far. And if you really want to learn about fashion feng shui, you'll come to a seminar that's a week long and really get this in-depth training so that you can be a consultant or you can, you know, for the rest of your life, really dress with that intention because you really get it. So you know, a book like that, is generating, you know, every time somebody buys it, loves it, and signs up for the seminar, that's like $3,500 for the seminar. But more than that, also, she's generating interest from people who want to hire a fashion feng shui consultant now, you know, and so it generates business.
And speaking fees.
Yeah, and then speaking fees. So do you want to talk a little about what your book has done for you, Linda?
Well, that's the part because I'm very upfront. The majority of books that are written, I'll just use mine as an example. When The Juicy Joyful Life came out, I was so new to running a publishing company, not as a magazine but as a book publishing, that I was just focused on the quality of the book. As it was getting close, I actually got called by a publicist who picked me up, put me on a 40-city radio tour. It opened the doors to 3 telesummits that I got to speak on. Unbelievable collaborative opportunities. Now, if I was to put a value on what happened in the 6 months after the book came out, just from a marketing and PR point of view, easy $50,000 of services that came my way, not cash, of services and PR that came my way that I didn't have to pay for that helped build my brands to the next level. Does that make sense, Elizabeth?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So we were seen.
Yeah.
And from there, it just kept building with the second book, et cetera. Now, a lot of times, even when you hit bestseller status, and both our books did within hours of their release, it doesn't mean bestseller status that you wrote, just raked in $100,000. Because to do a top quality book launch, et cetera, there are expenses. So do your book sales cover your expenses? That's the question I get most of the time, Lisa. Before I give my answer, what's your response to that, Lisa?
So, yeah, so with my first book, it did. You know, our book sales did cover our expenses. We hired an expensive publicist, $21,000, and they did a great job. We got a lot of national publicity, and our book sales covered our expenses, but it took a few years and then went over that, so we made more than that. But
but
if I look at what came out of that, you know, one thing was being on the faculty of Harvard Medical School's publishing course, which I think shows me as you know, a leader in my field. So that was a result of the book. And another, you know, another thing is really my whole career that came out of it, really came out of publishing that first book and getting a lot of great publicity, national publicity. So, if I look at the dollars that came in over time, it's, you know, phenomenal. Hundreds of thousands of dollars came in because of that one book. But and I still get a check every month for book sales, not every month, every quarter for book sales. So certainly there's, you know, that financial
residual
growing, the residual.
But not the big rush of book sales. And what I'd love to cover too, Lisa, if you have time and Elizabeth's great, is I want to get into how you work with clients for book contracts, because not the publishing industry has changed so much that most authors aren't, tell me if this is your experience, most authors aren't getting those contracts because the publishing industry is holding on so tightly right now. What's your experience? Because I know you've got some amazing client stories of what you've been able to do for them.
So, you know, what I would say is first, self-publishing can really work well for people too. So traditionally publishing isn't the only way to go, and for some people it's better to self-publish. You'll have the book faster, you'll keep control, you can have it working for you and your business or your life much quicker. So, I'm sorry, can you hold 1 second?
Yeah, we can. I can kind of tell what she's going to say as far as Linda. She's talking about the difference between publishing and self-publishing, you know, traditional publishing and self-publishing, and the self, I don't know if she's back yet, but self-publishing,
yeah.
You know, like I've self-published a children's book and it's doing great. And we did that so that the book wouldn't take a year and a half to come out.
Right.
It was faster. But Lisa, are you back?
But if you want to traditionally publish, you certainly there are still opportunities. But the piece that people have to realize is you're going to need to write a really fabulous book proposal. And part of that is really developing a following. So somebody like Elizabeth has a following. You have a following, Linda. But if somebody doesn't have a following, they're going to need to develop that. And one of the fastest ways is to blog, and then blog on your own site, and then, you know, get to where you could blog on a bigger site like the Huffington Post. So, you know, there are ways to develop a following and ways to develop a platform, which is what they call it in the industry. But that is a piece you're generally going to need to do in this market right now if you want a traditional publisher.
You want anything, yeah.
And when you say, give people an idea of numbers, because I get that question a lot. When they look at someone, you're talking about email lists and social media. That's a platform. So
yeah.
Email lists, the number I've heard back from contacts is minimum 10,000. They said they used to do 5,000, but because of their open rates. Have you heard those same numbers?
You know, it depends so much on the book. So for a relationship book, it would be much, much higher. So for a money book, again, probably much higher, unless, let's say you're on Forbes.com for a money book or a business book. Let's say you're on the Huffington Post and Psychology Today for a relationship book. You know, then you've already got some platform that way, and your email list is not going to be quite as critical. But still,
because you have a good
platform, the higher the numbers, the better.
Okay.
Well,
let me
bring this back to the person who's sitting here listening to this call, who does not have any of that, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We are ground, just scratch,
ground
nothing,
zero.
Yeah, nothing going on like that. No mailing list, no real great following in social media, no nothing. Should I still write?
Absolutely. Yes. And that's part of what I do at Inspired Living Publishing is the books we put out are written by women and for women. They're co-authored books. And we've signed over 60 authors with more coming for the third book. And what I realize is 90% of them are conscious business owners, coaches, healers, teachers, who want that experience and want an opportunity to build a platform. We give them the marketing and everything behind it to help them build their platform. So when they're done writing their book, they have a platform to hit the ground running. So, but Lisa, you also work with clients on that end.
Yeah, and what I'll do is very individual. So, you know, really looking at what's the best way for them to build a platform, and I may just advise them, and it might be stuff they can do on their own for free, or it may be that I suggest that they work with somebody to develop that platform. And it'll depend on sort of what kind of book they're writing, what their audience is, and how big a platform they need to develop, and also the book itself. You know, sometimes for certain kinds of books, the book has got such a great hook that they just need to do a little bit of platform building. Maybe they hire a publicist, get a little local TV, so at least they can show that they do a good interview on TV. It really, really is individualized. But I think for example, what Linda does with authors is such a great way to just, you know, get started and get things going. You don't have to be an expert in this. Get other people to help you who know what they're doing. And yet, if you don't have the budget for any of that, you know, sometimes there are other ways that I make suggestions to people for their particular book. So it is very individualized.
Now, do you... Let me ask you this about... Let's go self-publishing for a minute here. Can you just write anything, put it up on, you know, CreateSpace, Lulu.com or whatever, and just put it, you know, design a little book jacket and out it goes? Or do you still need to work a little bit if you're going to self-publish? Should you clear typos? Should you get an editor? You know, that type of thing.
Personally, I see a lot of that are just put out there, and I want everyone listening to think of this. What goes out in the world is a reflection of you, your brand, and your business. So, yes, I do see people do that. Highly recommend not doing it without getting professional services, like a professional editor, professional graphic designer, because that is out there forever. So that's my opinion of, yes, you can self-publish, but don't take the easy way out, because you'll always regret it, because that will reflect your brand and image. Get a good editor. Lisa, what's your thoughts on that, about just someone putting something out like that?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I had a client maybe a year ago who we'd worked together a bit, and then I suggested that he work with an editor, you know, kind of doing a lot of detailed editing.
Yeah.
And he found somebody himself that he'd known some other way, and they worked together. And then he said, you know, oh, I've got my book on CreateSpace now, and I had told him I'd interview him for the blog, and I looked at the book, and it just, you know, I knew what he wanted to accomplish, and he had been doing some public speaking and doing well with it, and here was a book that was not going to make him look like the professional he is. And I said, you know, you want to be speaking, you know, to, like, through corporations, and, you know, this book is going to send the wrong message. And it was partly, it was a few little things. Like, one was it needed some more editing. Not a ton, but it definitely needed some more editing, and there were typos. In addition, the margins were wrong, and I think the person who did the layout did a gorgeous cover, but they didn't know the standard margins in a book, and so... And partly maybe they were trying to save money, so have more words on a page. But whatever it was, you open the book and you were like, whoa, you don't want the book to look self-published. And yeah. So, you know, these things matter. And so you just want to get professionals. Now, sometimes people will go through something like CreateSpace or, you know, one of the self-publishing companies and just use their services. But remember that they're competing on cost. And so they're going to have very inexpensive services, but they're not going to do much at all. So if you really want it to look nice, and also if you really want to have good editing so that, you know, the style is good, the punctuation, you don't have typos, you're going to hire someone who, you know, separately, a freelancer.
Absolutely. I know my book, I'm certifiably the typo queen. In my blog, I always have that disclaimer, but it's a blog. My book, I know you and I, Lisa, we're like, oh, I got to get this out the door. Should I just put it and put a typo seal of approval on it or what? And we're like, no, we decided over the past few days we're going to edit the thing. And so, you know, we're going through detail by detail editing my book, for example, to get rid of the typos and to make sure, you know, it's in good, clean shape, because this is very key what you're saying. It's a huge reflection on not just me, but you or everybody that's involved with the Best Ever You Network. I mean, we don't want to put something out there that's a poor reflection of all of us. So, and I feel very responsible for that. So as I started to think about, you know, because you get kind of tired and you get kind of, you know, you get, it's putting, anything worth doing is kind of hard sometimes. And you can get tired from doing it. And it's a lot of work to write a book. And, you know, it was the funniest thing. I told you this a few days ago. You know, what's sitting on my desk is like 2 inches thick of paper clipped together, and I'm thinking, oh, this is a nice long book. And I did use a self-publishing thing just to kind of see where I'm at and what I've got and how it looks, because I'm a visual person. And the thing came back 100 pages. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. It's 100 pages long. And remember, you know, how it's very interesting how just, you know, the process, what you think you've written is so long, it might not be when it gets in book format. I mean, should a book be really long? Should a book be short? I know mine right now is sitting at about 25,000 words. Is that a good...
You know, again, you want to know your audience, because books are getting shorter. People have less time to read. And so people don't mind a shorter book. You know, there's some short books that really look, have that self-published look, and that can turn people off. But if a book looks inviting and it looks like it's going to be useful, people are still attracted to a short book. Many people, that's better for them. So think about your readers. Are they people who are really strapped for time, you know, working moms? Or, you know, are they people who are looking for a really long, thick read? So you want to understand that about your readers. But mostly it's about, you know, I would say it's about quality content. And how long does the book need to be? You know, if your book comes out at 100 pages and there's really not much left to say, don't force something else out.
Yeah.
So you know, be careful about that. I mean, you might find that if you add some design elements, or let's say you added a question for reflection in each chapter and gave them some space to write, that may add to the length of the book. So there may be ways to do something that actually is beneficial for the reader and really adds to the book and makes it a little bit longer, and that could be a positive. But, yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about that, because really there is some flexibility in how long a book is. But, you know, it used to be when my book came out, The Ultimate Guide to Transforming Anger, it was like, you know, your self-help book was expected to be about 350 pages, and that's not really true anymore. They want, you know, they want something shorter than that.
Yeah. Now, we're getting a question about, and I thought we would, because I prepped you guys for this. We're getting a question about agents. And, you know, I was joking earlier, you know, is there like an agent club where they all hang out and we don't know where they are? Because they seem to, like, be a little mystery. But, you know... If you're going to decide to not self-publish and go the route of, you know, we could have a typo, or we might have a, it might look self-published and so forth, and you really want to hold out for that agent and that contract and that in traditional way of publishing, is there some place that you should go to get one, or do we start through you? And I mean, where are they?
Big writing question.
Yeah.
Come on, Lisa. We want the key to that back door.
Know, Lisa.
Nowadays, there are more ways than ever to get to know agents. But one is certainly go to conferences, and, you know, if they offer that you can pitch to agents or get to meet agents, you know, take advantage of that. And, you know, a good one is the International Women Writers Guild has www.iwwg.org.
Mm-hmm.
Twice a year, they have a meet the agents. It's like $100, maybe even a little less, and you'll see a whole panel of agents talk about what they're looking for, and then you can get in line to pitch them for your book. And you might get to pitch one, or you might get to pitch a few, depending on the lines. It's not always super organized, but that's like, you know, an inexpensive way, and it's in New York every year, twice a year to pitch, you know, and meet agents. Another thing is the Harvard course. It's www.harvardwriters.com, and that's another place where you get a lot of agents, and not only do you get to pitch them, but even better, you get to actually talk with them and get feedback on your book concept, because they're part of the faculty of that course where I teach. So that's a great place. But you may find, you know, just more general writers' conferences as well, depending on the type of book. You know, Harvard is specifically, if you're writing sort of a health-related book or you know, well-being, sort of mental health kind of book. But there are lots of places where you can meet agents. The other thing is, you know, online is a great place to meet agents. So I would really do some research. You know, what are some books like yours, and who are the agents? If they're too much like yours, they're probably not interested, because they don't want, like, the super, super direct competition for a book they agented, but something that's you know, in that vein but a different book would interest often, you know, the same agents. So do a little research and figure out which agents might be appropriate. And Jeff Herman has a great guide to agents. You can also do some searching online. And then, you know, see, do they have a blog? Are they on Twitter? You can start to get to know them through the virtual world, and that will be helpful too. And one other thing that's just kind of a very detailed point, but is if they do say, sure, send your proposal, you've got to mark on the envelope requested materials enclosed in the bottom left-hand corner, or otherwise it ends up in the slush pile and they don't realize they requested it, and, you know, you won't hear back for many months. But if you put that on the envelope, then they know, oh, this is something I requested, and they're going to open it sooner. So it's two very different piles they go into. So just make sure you do that one thing. But, yeah, you can definitely reach agents nowadays. And if you work with someone like me, you know, I often, probably usually, will have some agents in mind for someone. And once we get the proposal in shape, I'll email or call some of the agents I know and say, you know, I think this is a good fit for you. Are you interested? And that can help a lot, too.
Right. Now, there seem to be a couple other different kind of writing critters out there. And there's this one type of writing critter out there who lives in the world of someday I'm gonna. Someday I'm gonna. And years fly by, and there's still someday I'm gonna. How do you guys take the someday I'm gonna people and get a book out of them?
Well, they really have to do that. You know, they have to make that decision that, okay, it's not going to be someday, you know, I'm going to do it now, because they're going to have to take something off their plate, make the time and space for their book, and make that commitment that, you know, okay, I'm going to write this number of hours a week, or I'm going to get this kind of support to get the book written, or I'm going to join this program that Lisa has. But, you know, they've got to figure out a way they're going to make it happen. Or I'm going to first do, you know, one chapter in a book and work with Linda. But they've got to make that commitment themselves, because until they make that commitment and they create the space and time in their schedule, you know, they're not there. I mean, what would you say, Linda?
Well, for me, it's like exactly what Lisa said. You have to fit the space. I mean, when I met Lisa, my schedule was jam-packed. Aspire was growing. Lisa challenged me. So for everyone on this call, I'll give you the same challenge. Are you tired of putting your dreams on hold? And when Lisa paraphrased that, I just said, I will make the time. And remember, Lisa, my biggest time waster was getting on the computer in the morning and answering emails. So I committed to not doing that and to writing first. So you have to commit. I mean, we can't work, just like a life coach, they can't work with someone that's not fully committed to the process. We can't guide you in your writing until you make the decision that it's an important part of what you want to birth in the world.
Okay, and then there's another kind of writer. Sometimes there's lots of different writers, but I'm going to pick on these two. There's the other kind of writer who is, I'm going to phrase this interesting way. I don't want to do it this way because I don't think I'm going to get a traditional publisher for it, or I can't because it doesn't seem possible, or they live in the world of I'm not going to do this because I don't think I'm going to get published, or an agent, or a, you know, that a contractor, and so they never really even begin. I've seen so many people that I know, so many people even that don't begin because they can't get, or don't think they can get what they need to get it done. Does that make sense? Go ahead.
All I wanted to say on that was I work with a lot of women who believe in the truth and message of what they want to share, and they want to birth it to the world. Whether they get the ideal, their vision of getting their story or book out is more important than the how. So when that person has a pulling to publish a book or story that can transform lives, and that pulling is more than this ideal situation that they have in their mind, they're going to move forward. But see what I mean? If they're so concentrated on how it's going to be birthed, that's really just an excuse to stop themselves from giving birth to their story or book.
What are other excuses that
people... Stop focusing on
the
how-to. Focus on who you're here to serve with your story and the lives it can transform. If you start thinking from that point of view, I'll tell you, it's it fills you with passion.
Well, because, you know,
and I
every...
think,
Go ahead.
I think also, you know, that idea of starting smaller, like, you know, what Linda does with people, and so you start with one story instead of a whole book, that can also really help people bridge that gap. You know, I think a lot of people, they'll write that one story and say, okay, I could do that, and then they can write a book. So sometimes that's really, really helpful to get that first story written, have it in a book that does well. Now they're an author, you know, and then take that next step. If you're feeling overwhelmed, that can really be a nice progression.
What are other excuses that people make that you're familiar with? It's interesting because people are soliciting your help or trying to get there, but people come geared and armed with excuses of why they can't. What are sometimes, you know, it's very common. Writers are, you know, there's all sorts of different ways to write and stuff, but what are other excuses other than time, the I'm gonna's, and the how's? What else?
I'm not a writer. And, you know, that's a really good one to look at because I think a lot of times we don't learn those writing skills in school, and so it seems like, oh, you have to be talented or smoke and mirrors. You know, we don't really get it. But I actually was surprised. When I first started doing this work, I didn't realize how quickly somebody can turn from somebody who really doesn't know how to write and it's not compelling to somebody who really writes compelling work. And it's not, you know, it's not talent, it's not rocket science, it's just employing a few rules about good writing. So you know, that's a really common excuse, and I understand where people are coming from because they were probably told they couldn't write. But it humbled me when there were people that I almost turned away and thought, you know, let me give them a chance and just give them some feedback and see what they do with it. And, you know, when it came back better than something I could write, it was like, okay, this person can write. You know, they just needed the tools, and they had never gotten them. So they got C's in English, but it was not a reflection on their, you know, their possibility and ability in any way.
Do you think that writing, writing and drawing or painting or illustrating, you know, artwork and so forth, it seems to be different in people. It seems like some people really can't draw. So, you know, that seems to be sometimes a very clear line. You know, people can't paint or they can't draw or they really just can't. Like, I know I can't.
Yeah.
I never say I can't, and I know my kids make fun of me for my stick figures even. I'm not a painter or a drawer or an artist, new. But writing is different. Can you maybe explain the difference between what I'm trying to say there, between the I can't and the I can? Because I think people get stuck in that artsy mode. Go ahead.
It depends on the kind of book you're writing, but if you were writing, you know, I think fiction is a whole nother ball of wax, but my area is nonfiction. So if you're writing a how-to book, it's about can you convey your ideas in a way that makes sense and that your readers will resonate, and can you tell some stories maybe that bring it to life, or can you bring it to life in some way? If it's a memoir, again, can you bring it to life and have it be meaningful for your reader? And so... most people are able to do that often with help, right, with a good editor or with a book program. But, you know, they need some help because it's not something they've done before. There are a few people who really, I think, really it is a struggle and maybe a book isn't the best way for them to go. I haven't met a lot of them, but I've met a few. And what I would say about that sort of group in general is they really have trouble focusing an idea. So, like, even a sentence will be going in three directions. It won't be focused. A paragraph will be going in five directions and lacking focus. When somebody's mind doesn't work in sort of those making direct connections and going from one idea to the next, if they really can't do that, they may not be able to write a book. And then maybe they need a ghostwriter, or maybe they need to find another way. You know, maybe a one-woman show or one-man show might be the way that they express.
It comes out in verbal instead of writing. I know we were just having this discussion with somebody earlier today. They're like, you know, I said, let me read what I'm writing to you. And she's like, now that changes the whole scope of what you just wrote. It was so interesting. And I said, let me just read this to you. And she said, okay, so that's how you need to write. The way you talk, that's how you got to write. And so it was a very interesting conversation I had this morning with someone. So that, you know, it was very neat. But, you know, I'm just trying to draw people back to, you know, writing is an outlet. It can be an outlet if you use it that way. And, you know, we only have a few minutes left. 5 minutes left, I think. So I wanted to bring people back to just the sheer joy and love of writing. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. One of the things that I do with people is I do what I call a meet your muse visualization. And
yeah.
Take them to, you know, I think you've been through that.
Send to Nadia. Yeah, Nadia on a mountain on a balance beam and go for it.
Right. But you know, the idea is like our muse is that creative part of us. And it might sometimes feel like it's coming from inside of us. It might sometimes feel like it comes from outside of us. It doesn't really matter where it's coming from. But it's very powerful to connect with that. And so, you know, what connects you to your creativity? You know, it might be that you take a walk in nature before you write. It might be that you create a vision statement about what your book's going to do and you read it each time before you write. It might be that you play some music or just set up your desk in a way that inspires you. I don't know, Linda, do you have other suggestions of how to get in touch with that inspiration?
Well, you know what I have. I have your CD. Remember that first CD you sent me about, she does this guided meditation. This is one of the reasons I knew that she was the book coach that I wanted, because we work with the universe in the same way. I may not know the exact name of the CD, but it guides you through a visualization to connect with your inner muse. And the first time I heard that, it was powerful. And I, for quite a while, I needed that guided visualization before I could start writing, because I was setting myself up for something completely new. What is the name of that again? Am I naming it right? And do you still have it?
Writing in the Zone. I do.
Yeah, I love that. That's when we first met, I think. I still have that CD from when we first met. It was at one of the live events, and that is transformational for me, because it brings you to that place of, I can do this. I have it within me. We all have it within us. So that
was
my
moment. I fell in love with Lisa too, where she did that with me. She was like, I got to get you to focus on something. You know, I don't know what we were talking about. It was, I think the chapters didn't flow right or something. I don't know what we were doing, but we were trying to get me not so choppy. And she did this exercise with me over the phone. And I almost didn't cooperate at first because it was so awkward to me. I'm just like, what do you want me to do? You know. But it took me probably 4 days to really process that moment with Lisa. And now I'm just like, I get it totally. So it's all about things that are new to you and getting used to new, you know, it's just a new concept. You know, writing a book is a new concept, and you just sort of have to dive in and familiarize yourself with all of the elements to produce what you're trying to do. And that can mean, I know we have 2 minutes left, but that can mean adding words to your vocabulary like Lisa Tenner and Linda Joy and their teleseminar, because these two ladies really know how to help you bring the book out of you. And I know firsthand how they work and just, you know, I you guys are just brilliant, and I love you both, and I thank you for all that you do for women and helping in so many different ways. It's not just books, but it's phone calls and it's emails and it's the magazine that Linda produces, Aspire Magazine, and you know, your websites and your blogs and your emails that go blasting out into the universe, and this teleseminar. So if people want to reach you, let's give the teleseminar one more time because we only have a few minutes left here. How do they sign up for that teleseminar? It's lisatenner.com/inspired-teleseminar. Did I get that right?
That's right. And it's lisatenner.com.
Yep. And then I'd like to just give one final moment to Linda for her magazine. Linda, if people want to subscribe to Aspire Magazine, can you? It's mission2inspire.com, is that correct?
Yes, it is, and it's a free subscription with $3,500 in transformational gifts from our partners.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you both for being with me for the hour. I appreciate everything that you do, and good luck tomorrow night. And
thank you.
We'll bring that number to 1,000, I hope, or more with this information. And good luck, and thank you again. I hope you guys come on the show and bring some of your authors with. That'll be fun to see what books get created out of this teleseminar tomorrow night. So thank you, Elizabeth.
It was fun.
Yeah, we're trying to have fun on a very serious topic, so writing a book.
Well,
all right, so bring your book to life. Go ahead.
Ease. My intention is ease, so we want to bring
ease.
That in, too, because there can be ease.
Yeah, bring your book to life in 2012. Lisa and Linda Joy, thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.